We own this country. We own it. And it's not you owning it and not politicians owning it. Politicians are employees of ours. And they're just going to come around and beg for votes every few years, and it's the same old deal. But I just think that it's important that you realize that whether you're Democrat or whether you're a Republican or whether you're Libertarian or whatever, when somebody does not do the job, we got to let them go.
When your entire culture is under attack, you need the country's number one voice in defense of our American way of life. You need an ally in the fight against tyranny and corruption. You need your weekly dose of Lisa Payne Nager. Missouri Grassroots Radio Network proudly adds our own beauty to America the Beautiful, your own culture vigilante, Ms. Lisa Payne Nager.
Well, good evening, folks, and thank you for joining us on Missouri on Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm standing in tonight for Lisa Payne Nager, who isn't able to be here and asked me to stand in. This is Cindy McGee. So you're not hearing things. You're hearing the right voice for tonight anyway. We have a great show lined up for you. Later in the show, about 8 o'clock, we will be listening to an interview that Lisa did late last year in November. On the Delphi technique, which is something very important for you to learn, what that is, how it can affect you when you go out to try to make a difference, whether you're arguing on behalf of Common Core being ousted from your state, or whether you're going to a town hall meeting, school board meeting, anything where you want to get involved, where people have agendas, the Delphi technique can be used, and it's used effectively to shut down dissent and to change the course of the discussion and to prevent your voice from being heard. So that's an interview you don't want to miss. This evening I'm going to have two very special guests with me, Gretchen Logue and Ann Gassel, both with Missouri Education Watchdog. These two ladies really are bulldogs when it comes to Common Core and fighting to save our education system here in Missouri and to keep your children safe from the clutches of people who have designs on them and have their own agenda for them. And so we'll be talking to them here in just a couple of minutes. I want to start tonight's show with a very good report. I am so happy to tell you, which many of you probably already know, that Justina Pelletier is finally home with her family after an 18-month battle with the Massachusetts DCF, who took her away from them a year ago, December 20th. She took her to the hospital per her doctor's request to receive treatment for a disease that she suffers from. Well, she had the flu. She also suffers from an immune disorder. And when they went there, the attending physician, who was a psychiatrist, disagreed with her doctor's diagnosis in the emergency room and wanted a different course of a treatment, felt that she needed to be treated for a psychological disorder. Long story short, 2 days later, that led to Justina being taken away from her parents and put into the custody of DCF in Massachusetts. The family lived in Connecticut, and it's been a long, hard battle, and we've been on this story for quite a while now, and a lot of people have gotten involved, and her case has really come to light, and it was an important case because she is not the only child, and this isn't the only family this has happened with across our nation. And it was due to a lot of people getting involved, making phone calls, and relentlessly going after the judge and DCF in Massachusetts, demanding that this injustice be righted and that this child be returned to her family. And today, that happened. And I am thrilled to report that. It's very exciting because this was a terrible injustice for the family, for Justina. And now she's back in the loving care of her family, and hopefully she will get the medical treatment that she's been denied for the last 18 months. So that's good news. Tonight we're going to be talking to Gretchen and Anne about something that I think that all of you can really get your heads around and should really make you very angry, but I don't just want you to be angry. By the end of tonight's show and our discussion with Gretchen and Anne, I hope that you're motivated to get involved in your local school district and any further up you want to go. But this is an issue that concerns all of us, and it concerns the futures of our children, and it has to do with Common Core STEM reform, and that's what they're saying. We need Common Core to reform STEM. So I'm going to bring Gretchen on with me because she is the one who knows everything about this and can really help us along here. So Gretchen, thank you for joining me tonight.
Well, thanks for having me, Cindy.
So where do you want to start tonight? I have a lot of questions. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Well, I'd kind of like to know, STEM, when you say STEM, some people may not know what STEM actually means, and that's science, technology, engineering, and math. And we've been told that we have a STEM shortage and our kids aren't doing well in STEM courses in school, and so we need Common Core standards to be able to prepare these kids for these STEM jobs. So my question, and I would consider you know more than the average bear, I think, on education, that sort of thing, but I'd kind of like to ask you a question. When somebody says, we're going to prepare your child for a STEM job, we got the idea and this is the ticket, you as a parent, as a taxpayer, as someone who has used the public schools before, on face value, what do you think that means?
Well, I would take that to mean that they wanted to improve education in the public school to prepare students to go into a career in the science, technologies, mathematics, engineering area, and to make them college ready for that and prepare to do well in their studies in college, to come out with a degree and the ability to get a good job in one of those areas.
Mm-hmm. And so I think, would you say that the average, I feel like a defense attorney, would you say that the average person, if you have somebody say, we're going to have your kid be ready for a STEM job, what kind of job as a parent do you think most parents would consider that? What do you think their children would either be a doctor, a scientist, a dentist, ready to go to dentistry school? You know,
I would think that, or a job with NASA, or a job in, an engineering job with an up and coming, with a company. I think of Bill Great Gates and Microsoft and some great jobs there, and I would think of a big company like that that. Or maybe even a smaller company, but that they would be prepared to go into one of those types of jobs and do really well and have the tools and receive a good income so that they could pay back all their student loans and that's what I would think. That's what I would expect.
Well, I think that's kind of what they're counting on, the proponents of Common Core, that's what they want you to think. I mean, when you think about it, mm-hmm. a STEM job, in science, technology, engineering, mathematics, you think, oh, my goodness, this is great. And I think that's how they have sold it to the American public. So what we, Ann and I do write for Missouri Education Watchdog, but we're also part of the Missouri Coalition Against Common Core, which is a coalition of people from around the state of Missouri. And I think one of the things that we want to focus in preparation for this next legislative session, is to talk about some of the definitions that the proponents have used, which, of course, include our state agency. DESE includes most of the superintendents of the state, educational bureaucrats. STEM is science, technology, engineering, mathematics. Initially, when it was rolled out, that these will make kids college and career ready. Well, I don't know how standards can make you college and career ready.
Right.
Usually career ready means you're ready to go into a technical school or you're ready to go for a job. College means that you need more training to do what it is you want to do and to determine what kind of, and to become more of a well-rounded individual. There's kind of the disconnect right there. But as these 4 years, we have discovered that they are backing down, and the STEM job that Common Core will only make you ready for a STEM. Plan for a 2-year community college.
Oh.
STEM. Jason Zimba, who is the architect of the math standards, he's on video. Sandra Stotsky was talking to him in Massachusetts, and he admitted that Common Core will only make kids ready for a two-year college and not ready for a four-year college that most parents would aspire their children to attend. Now, that's pretty concerning because these state agencies and governors were told that it's going to make you college ready. They just didn't tell you that it was going to make you ready for community college.
Okay, and that's a technique that they use a lot. They use, what you think I said, what you think you heard is not what I really said.
That's right.
In other words, they're saying one thing, but it means something else, or they've left out pertinent, important information that would raise a red flag and get you and that would then get you to follow along with their agenda because you think, like we discussed a minute ago, you're preparing my child to enter a four-year university to study in the area of engineering or mathematics or the sciences, the medical field, whatever, something related to this, to STEM, and that they're going to come out of that ready to apply for and a good career.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're really saying is they're going to say they're only going to prepare them for two-year college.
That's right. Huh. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with preparing for an associate's degree or going into community college, but that leads me into the second part of their PR campaign where they said that the standards were ceiling. You remember that. They're higher, more rigorous, that sort of thing. About 6 months ago or so, there was a shift in the narrative. Now all of a sudden, we're being told they're the floor. And in fact, Chris Nicastro, in her House testimony this past October, said they are the floor. So they can't be the floor and they can't be the ceiling at the same time. So what are they? If they're saying that they're the floor, then that will get you into a two-year college. Now, they will tell you that the standards will, a school can do much more, can go higher than the standards. But the other part that they don't tell you on that is that the teachers will not be assessed on anything extra that a school offers. In other words, that won't count towards their assessments. And they are so burdened with these Common Core professional development, that sort of thing, you will see those higher-level classes probably start falling off because there's not enough time, there's not enough financial resources now for the assessments, and those are just going to be by the wayside. So what you're going to see, if you keep your child in public school, if you want them to have the higher math courses and science courses to get into a really high-tier university, you are going to have to go outside and get them tutoring, get them classes somewhere else because they're not going to be able to get into the higher-level performing universities with the Common Core coursework.
Right. So parents in that situation are going to be in for a big surprise when their kids take their college entrance exams and they find out they're only qualified to attend a two-year college and that they're going to need more education.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I want to real quickly welcome Ann to the show. Good evening, Ann. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Cindy. Sorry, it took me a while. I was having phone difficulties on my end.
That's okay. We're just getting started. So in view of what you just said, Gretchen, let me try to pull my thoughts together here. This is such an explosive subject. It really is. And it's really important for people to get around it. You know, one of the things that stood out to me when I was doing some research about this in preparation for tonight's show, I read your excellent article on Missouri Education Watchdog on this, is that the Council of Chief State School Offices are really pushing for this education reform. And one of the reasons that they tout for that is that as a national organization that supports state leadership in education policy, CCSSO promotes thoughtful approaches to improving U.S. education systems. U.S. students recently finished 25th in mathematics and 17th in science in a ranking of 31 countries' performance on international assessments. Improving STEM education is a national priority that requires an increased focus at the federal, state, and local levels. CSSO is pleased to join INSPIRE as we work together to strengthen educational pipelines for STEM students across the country. Well, either their ignorance or they're complicit in deceiving people about what Common Core is really going to do and really give their children. Is that a correct assessment?
Yeah, I would say they're not ignorant.
I was just playing the devil's advocate.
I know.
Not working so well. So basically, they're using the same type of deceptive language to sell a program that they want to see done. And what you're telling me is that, and what they're really doing is they've lowered, I think their statement about it being the floor is closer to the truth than telling us it was the ceiling in the past few years. In that they're now preparing us to expect less,
mm-hmm.
not more, from what
they're
going to
deliver
in education.
You know, it's kind of that equity thing where everybody goes to college. Well, not everybody needs to go to college, and not everybody wants to go to college, and not everybody is college material. But if you bring it down low enough, then everybody can go to college.
Right. And
go
ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah. So you know, it's just kind of that straw man article. And what you read was from the blog that put on yesterday, which would have been June 17th. Mm-hmm. One thing that they don't tell you, that the half-truth, is that maybe the U.S. students did perform at that level, but most of those countries do not test all of their students, which we do, and
right.
we test kids that have special education needs. We test children that have English as second language. We have a very diverse culture in the United States, whereas countries such as China and Korea and Finland and those, it's pretty homogenous culture there. So we have a very diverse society. So you are going to see kind of lower scores because we test, pretty much as close as we can to 100% of the students. So you really are talking apples and oranges here.
Right. So in the best sense of the word, the best use of this terminology, that would be a good example of No Child Left Behind, in that we include all children in our testing so that they're all counted in our nation. And whereas other countries, it's my understanding that in a lot of these countries that are tested and we're compared to, those students aren't even allowed to attend the same schools as the students that they test that are included in these statistics on a national and international level that we're compared to. So that's completely erroneous. That's a completely erroneous set of statistics then.
Well, and it's great that if you want to use it to sell a particular program. And that's what they've
propaganda.
Done.
Right. It's good propaganda. It is. So, the U.S., getting into the meat of some of what you covered in your article, the United States is, and if you want to jump back to something or jump in with something else, please do. The United States is currently issuing 65,000 H-1B visas a year. They're six-year visas. In addition to 20,000 that are set aside for advanced degree graduates of U.S. colleges. Let me say that again. In addition, we have 65,000 visas being issued every year. They're six-year visas to foreign students, to foreign workers, and 20,000 additional visas for advanced degree graduates of U.S. colleges, which means these would go to foreign students attending U.S. colleges, these visas to work in the United States. Are American workers currently being displaced by foreign workers hired by American companies who are supporting Common Core STEM education?
Leanne, do you want to pipe in here, or do you want me to take this?
Well, as I understand it, under that visa program, the companies are not obligated to follow the pay scales of American workers, so they're getting the benefit of somebody working here, but really, in essence, outsourcing the job at the pay scale that they would normally be paying in another country. For every two degreed STEM students that we graduate, only one of them ends up getting a job in the STEM field. So we really don't have a shortage of STEM workers. What we have is a mismatch between wage expectations between American workers, American students, and foreign students. So I do believe that there's a tremendous advantage for these H-1B visa students in terms of the workforce, where they're getting offered the jobs, and the American students are not, or the American students are saying, I'm not taking it at that wage.
Right. So not only are the companies then getting workers, qualified workers at a lower wage, but they're displacing American workers and or students coming out of the same college programs who are then not going to get the jobs because that's not what they've devoted and spent their education money to get.
Right.
And that's what that article and that in the blog yesterday talked about. I mean, it was a detailed article from Computer World USA, and they were talking about 220 people had to train their replacements from India. They were being outsourced. It was all going overseas. And the guy said, you know, the younger workers were able to get something else, but the older workers, like himself, were not able to find anything else in IT. And it wasn't that they didn't know what they were doing. It was just a cost-cutting venture for the company.
Wow. So I'm a parent. I've sent my child to college. I've paid for part of that college. My child, has taken on probably student loans to help complete their degree. And suddenly the jobs aren't going to be there. Oh, the jobs are there, but they're not going to be there for our kids. They're going to be there for foreign workers willing to work here at a lower wage. And these companies benefit. And I'm going to say that, you know, municipalities and cities and states and the federal government benefit from those workers being here as well, monetarily. Would that be correct, or do you know anything about that?
Gretchen, you want to take that one?
I think that would.
Anybody can.
I think that would be. I mean, think about it. I mean, it's a dream. It's a dream for a business, right? I mean, you're outsourcing
people.
You're not having to do human capital management on somebody who's in India or wherever. You are going to be lowering your costs tremendously. I mean, it's for a company that's looking at its bottom line, it's going, this is great.
Mm-hmm.
This is great. And
in
the meantime, what you've done is that you've kind of dumbed down the curriculum so everybody can get into college for a 2-year degree. And, you know, and the other thing is that these labor statistics have said that the main jobs in the coming year are only going to require associate's degree. Your big push is going to be in the healthcare industry, but you're only going to need a 2-year degree.
So you're
going to be able
to being the dentist, you're going to be the dental hygienist.
Correct. Or you're going to be the, you know, the X-ray technician
or
something
that
only
requires.
There's nothing wrong with those jobs,
but that's not what a lot of these kids are going to school for.
Exactly. Or that's not what's being sold to them.
And that's not, exactly. That's not what's being sold that Common Core is going to accomplish for us. And
correct.
So they're lying to us about the outcome of what Common Core, once implemented throughout the country, is really going to result in for all of our children.
Right. And so they're telling you it's because we can't fill enough of the jobs, which is not true. We've debunked that. We're just going to import other kids from other countries that we can get a lot cheaper, and that's the bottom line.
Well, yeah, and you know, that brings me to another point. Inspire STEM USA is an organization that has a lot of American companies and a lot of different organizations involved with it that are pushing for all of this. And their stated purpose is supporting productive immigration reform and education supports Common Core STEM education reform. And they're basing that on another claim that is debunked in your article, Gretchen, they say we have high-skilled worker shortage, that there are annually 120,000 highly skilled computer jobs created in the U.S. for graduates with a bachelor's degree, which they project to continue into 2020, but they're claiming that we only have 40,000 degrees awarded annually in that field. But that's not true, is it?
I don't think it is. Anne, you want to take that one? Do you know more of the statistics on that?
No, I can't answer that one.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know the specific statistics on that, but, you know, you go further down in that article and you look at the other stats that are stated there, and you know, as Anne said, if you
right.
have two people for every one job, there's some disconnect there.
Right. Well, and there were
and
there are quite a few reputable organizations that that are reporting U.S. higher education produces far more science and engineering graduates annually than there are science and engineering job openings. The only disagreement they're having is whether it's 100% or 200%.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So if there was really a genuine shortage, there would be evidence of employees. And this is another thing. There would be evidence of these employers raising their wages, not lowering them, and offering more perks. It just what is really happening in the real world doesn't exposes the lie of what they're using to promote their education agenda and what they're really trying to do.
What I have done is spent a lot of time looking at the Bureau of Labor Statistics information and the Georgetown University information on the jobs and the future career path. And when they look at STEM, the biggest chunk of it is in software design. And yet software design requires very minimal science. It's very much based on programming, which doesn't need all of the other sciences in order to get you up to speed in that particular field. And the software programming is one of the lowest paying parts of STEM fields. The highest paying STEM jobs are managerial, which, again, a lot less on the science, more on the business and managerial aspects. But this is all getting wrapped into STEM. Wrap in with all of that, because now we have made the focus STEM, and everybody wants STEM because they want their child to do well in life and to earn a lot. And colleges are now charging more. They have these differential tuition rates, especially with the economic downturn in 2008, and they lost a lot of state funding for their different degree programs. What they did was they started charging more for the kids who were going into STEM degrees, because the theory was they were going to make more money on the way out. So, I mean, you're kind of screwed all the way around in this.
Wow.
And the fact that the federal government now holds all the student loans, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, they're
calling
the shots on how those student loans get paid back, and yeah, that, they do.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a never-ending funding stream.
It's I'm almost speechless here. That's a little bit. That should be a bit scary to everybody.
I'll tell you, Cindy. We just took my daughter to college for the orientation weekend, and she's going to study biology because that's what makes her heart sing. And I think that parents need to do some soul searching with their children and say, look, you got to do what you enjoy doing, what is going to provide the greatest benefit for people, which is what will make you happy. There's a lot of parents who look at degrees and they look at STEM and say, well, that's what's going to make you rich and you should do that. But it's a very hard road ahead, especially if you look at the statistics that are out there for those kids. So they need to really understand what STEM means, what it means, what those jobs are going to be in those fields. It's not the glamour that everybody's picturing. In fact, my daughter's majoring in biology, and the biological sciences are some of the lowest-paying ones.
Right. Hmm. Wow. So.
But it sounds better than being an English major. I mean, I can say that because I was an English major. I mean, think about it. It's great PR. I mean, it sounds great. And so who doesn't want to have really smart kids in America who know about science, technology, engineering, and math? Nobody. Everybody wants, you know, your kids to excel. But you just
Absolutely.
Have to peel back those layers and see what it's really all about, that we really don't have a STEM shortage, that we're providing these visas for kids to come on over, that companies can make, you know, I'm all for free market and I'm all for companies doing well, but,
right.
you know, when you're remaking America and you're keeping
right.
American kids from having jobs because you're predicating what you're doing on lies,
right.
that's when you say, no, this you know,
well,
we have to understand
right.
what they're saying and why they're saying it.
Right. Absolutely.
And I can't help but look.
Go ahead, Anne.
I can't help but look at what they're doing with Common Core, especially in the earliest grades when it comes to mathematics, making it so complex. You're going to turn off kids who might otherwise be very interested in mathematics, which is applicable across all of the sciences, and then they're just going to say, no, this is too hard. This isn't for me.
Right.
And so this push towards we want more kids to go into STEM, we're already kind of working against it with the way we have things sequenced in Common Core.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, and something else that occurs to me, now I'm putting my tinfoil hat on, folks, so just be prepared now. when I think about this and how they're saying they're going to prepare, you're being given words that would lead you to believe that your child is going to be prepared for a four-year diploma, bachelor's degree in one of these areas, whereas the truth is they're only being prepared for a two-year degree. That's
mm-hmm.
the first lie, and really a big stumbling block to your child. They're bringing foreign workers in to take these higher-end STEM jobs
mm-hmm.
right now, ostensibly because we don't have enough qualified students graduating that can fill those jobs, and yet we have people who are training in those areas who are training their own replacements because of this new policy of granting these visas, because of this shortage that has been manufactured of people to work in that area. So we're bringing all these foreign workers in here. American workers are being displaced. Your children are not really going to be receiving the education that they need in these STEM areas, which typically would or should provide better jobs. I'm still operating under that illusion. So it would seem to me that what they're doing is they're dumbing down American children to expect lesser jobs or to only qualify for lesser jobs, and kind of evening the playing field across the spectrum, and the companies, these big corporations, are the big benefactors. And people who have heard me know that I am not against companies and corporations making money. But let's do it legitimately. If your company is here in the United States, then you should be hiring U.S. workers. And the benefits of what you're promoting in education should be benefiting our students, not the other way around, and benefiting you. And that's what I'm seeing in this as part of the problem in all of this, is we're being fundamentally transformed through education.
Well, it's not the United States of America now. You're competing in a global, you know, it's all global. So, as you said, and that's kind of what I appreciated what you said, that you're leveling that playing field. And so you're in the global, you're on the global football field. You're not just the United States of America. So, you know, is that how we're transforming America, or are we just bringing so many immigrants in and
right.
leveling it that way? And if that's what the plan is, then we should know that's the plan, and don't try to call it something else.
Exactly. Don't call it education reform, Common Core, STEM education, and tell us that you're reforming it so our kids are going to have a better education and be better prepared to enter a good field out of college, that we're being lied to. We're being deceived. And we all want to believe the best from those people. And, you know, something else that is interesting are the companies that are involved in, some of the companies that are involved in this push. This, when I was reading some stuff with the Inspire STEM USA, you know, you've got some pretty heavy hitters here. Caterpillar, I was shocked at that after everything they went through with Obama and him saying that they were going to bring jobs back to Caterpillar that they had to lay off. Do you remember that whole brouhaha a few years ago?
Right.
when they used Caterpillar. And then Caterpillar turned around, and after all that was all said and done, and they actually became angry and finally told the truth that Obama used them and lied. They didn't bring more jobs to Caterpillar. They didn't. Nothing good came out of that for Caterpillar, and Caterpillar, in effect, actually started doing some of their exporting some of their jobs overseas to China. Mm-hmm. And now they're part of this push for this immigration reform and Common Core to bring, you know, ostensibly to improve the STEM area through Common Core.
Well,
and, IBM, Microsoft.
Disconnect.
There is a huge disconnect.
You know, between what they're saying they're going to provide and what they're not. And I have to disagree with you that a company should focus on, you know, hiring American workers. That's part of the vanguard of being a global corporation these days. They have no loyalty to any particular country. Their loyalty is to their investors and to their bottom line, and so they're going to find the least expensive way to do it. I just did a post yesterday with a retired lieutenant general who's working for a company now making paper towels, and they're currently being produced in China. He would very much like to bring the business to America, and he, you know, is targeting North Carolina to bring the business in, but he recognizes that to hire American workers to do those jobs is going to be much more expensive than the Chinese workers. So the net result is that they will automate significant portions of that production so that they don't have to pay the personnel costs. And then, so then at least you can say at the end of the day, well, we have American workers, but they're a global company and their loyalty, that's the big problem with these international companies, is their loyalty is not to any single country. Their loyalty is to themselves.
You're right. That's true. Point well taken. I agree with that, and I do. I guess I was thinking that an American corporation, you know, and I think therein, too, is some ignorance, like on my part and many people's parts. We don't even think in those terms that these companies are global companies. We become outraged that they're putting their loyalty somewhere other than in the United States, even though they're certainly benefiting, you know, ostensibly benefiting from being here or being part of this. But here they are trying to reform our education and our standards, and they're part of consortium, if you will, that are giving us, that are really leading us down the yellow brick road. That's not really what the outcome is going to be with Common Core education reform. In
That's
other words,
true.
Education is not going to get better. Our children aren't going to have better jobs, which is what in our minds, and they know that's what we think when they say that.
Well, the reality is they want to have a level playing field, and the way you have a level playing field is that you bring up the bottom and you bring down the top. Well, America's at the top, so what they will eventually get us to all get used to is a lower pay scale so that we are more on that level playing field with the rest of the globe.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, and what do you, I mean, it's also concerning that they're taking this whole stance on immigration reform, too, and with everything that's happening on our borders right now. I couldn't help but think about that when I was reading your article, Gretchen, and reading some of this stuff in here, some of your links to other stories and so forth, that you know, there was, I don't know, maybe I'm making a giant leap that I shouldn't, but I can't help but feel that the two are connected. That they are just trying to overwhelm us with foreigners to, as you said, leveling the playing field, change how America looks, what America expects, how we operate, our loyalties, our everything.
Well, it's kind of, you know, Ann and I have talked about this a long time. To me, it's the perfect example of that public-private partnership. And if you start reading in enough, and it's not just education, you know, it was Solyndra, it was Tesla, was it Tesla? Tesla, the car company, or one of the car companies?
Tesla,
where
Tesla.
Yeah, where the government gives them a lot of money to produce and this and that. And it's everything is taken out of the hand. All these education ideas and reforms are taken out of the hands of state legislators and the voters. And these private organizations have determined, and they're using federal money for grants or to fund the consortia or whatever it is, but they are using government money, and it's with the government's blessing, and they're setting up this whole different way of doing business in the country. And however, we still have to pay the taxes that are kind of funneling into these private companies to set these things up. But, you know, I look down the road and I think that's what America's turning out to be, is it's this public-private partnership, and they're totally held unaccountable to voters.
The American taxpayer
right.
is picking up the tab.
Well, you have to pay for it. I mean, we have to pay our school taxes. We don't have a choice of that. But if you think about it, I mean, it's really not representative anymore. It's the philanthropy. It's the corporations that are calling the shots of how things are going to be run.
Right.
And what is society going to look like?
Right. Do you think that might be a key to why we are having so much difficulty with so many Republicans and really conservatives even, who have been supporting Common Core and support all of this, that perhaps they're being influenced by, you know, and it might depend on state to state and so forth, and what type of industries and corporations and so forth there are in that state. But I also, in looking at this, don't you think that might be influencing a lot of the politicians who are supporting Common Core? That, because these companies, let's face it, folks, whether we like it or not, everybody wants a seat at the table when it comes to the laws that are being passed and how things are done and whether or not we're going to have tax benefits for certain people and not others, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so these corporations pay a lot to parties and politicians to get what they want on the table. And I can't help but think that this is another instance that we may be seeing, because I wonder why are, it's even been written into the Republican platform that we don't support Common Core, and yet we see some pretty heavy hitters in the Republican Party who are supporting Common Core.
Well, the U.S. Chamber is the largest lobbying organization in the country. I mean, they spend by far the most lobbying dollars in D.C., so in terms of your D.C. Legislators, yes, they absolutely have business interests in the forefront of their mind. I think it's a slightly different problem with the state legislators. I think for those that didn't spend time studying Common Core and who only know the talking points, you know, what's to not like about having everybody, you know, perform well?
Right. Well, and I think ignorance about what Common Core is really going to do, and they get their information from the wrong people, and then they don't, and then it takes a lot of time to educate them as to what's really at stake here. Yeah, I get that aspect of it, too. That's another important facet of it. But, you know, I think about in a state like Missouri, you know, there's been a lot of pushback from some politicians in Missouri on the Common Core, on defeating Common Core and getting rid of it here in Missouri. And, you know, we have a state that does have a lot of STEM type of companies, corporations here. You know, Monsanto comes to mind. We've got colleges and universities that have a lot of research projects and stuff. And all of this is kind of related to this, what's going on, and these visas and bringing these foreign students in and then being able to get the jobs. And, you know, you can't help but wonder, you know, in some states, like even like here in Missouri, that they may be influenced, that may be having an influence somewhat on them, and why it was so hard to begin to break open that shell and to get in there with what Common Core really is.
Well, Anne, don't you think that we've spent like the last 2 years, not so much this past year, but the year before, just basically educating the legislators on the state level? Because I think they had always, I mean, I don't think anybody had ever had a group to come in and say, you know what, maybe DESE isn't telling you the whole truth. You know, maybe they're not lying, but maybe they're not, you know, they're not telling you, you know, when they say, oh, we're not collecting data, they don't tell you the latter half of the sentence, oh, but your school districts are, you know, right. That sort of thing. And I think that I have to give our legislators some credit. I mean, I do think, and Anne, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that this year they really started to listen because we backed everything up we said with research and data.
Yeah, right. It's one of the unfortunate side effects of term limits is that the institutional knowledge remains with the government agencies and not within the legislative body. And so they really didn't have much choice but to believe what the agencies like DESE and DOR were telling them. So they appreciated having members of the public come in with the facts. And there were several
right.
times where the public had the facts and DESE didn't even have the facts.
Right. That's a wonderful moment in time.
Well, yes and no. Yes. Pretty sad.
That's a good thing. Oh, that's a good thing. So is there anything, I mean, there's so much to talk about here. We could go on and on forever. Is there anything else that I haven't brought up that you ladies, either one of you, thinks we need to touch on in regard to this?
You did mention that, you know, America, that quote at the top of Gretchen's post was that, you know, America ranks 25th in this and 17th in that. And that's one of the stalking horses that they use to justify why we need Common Core and why, you know, this focus on STEM and that sort of thing. But really when you disaggregate the U.S. scores and deal with the element of poverty, we're right up there with the other countries. So really what you find out is that those international tests are just a much better indicator of the level of poverty of the student rather than the level of competence of the student. So American schools aren't falling behind, but we just have a very high percentage of poor in our country that are taking
yeah,
the test.
We do. Right, and that's a subject for another show.
Yeah,
why do we have so many poor people in our country? And how has the government been complicit in that? So, no, that's true. That is true, and that's a good point. It really is, all joking aside. And that's a good point. So,
yeah.
And statistics do not, and that's something people really need to think about, too. Statistics don't tell the whole story, even when they're fairly and justly done, which these have not been, they're still not telling you the whole story.
The statistics can tell any story you want them to. That's the beauty of
exactly.
statistics.
Well, this is true. Yes, it is.
And that's the thing that we've seen over and over again is that they say they want the data so that they can determine what their policy is going to be.
Right.
So they're going to take the data and they're going to skew it in whatever way they want to, and they're going to say, okay, well, based on this data, this is what our policy has to be now.
Right. Yeah, if they know everything about a person from the womb to the tomb, and that's basically where this data collection is headed really quick, they could skew anything to say just about anything they wanted it to based on the data they collect and
mm-hmm.
how they manipulate it, and manipulate
mm-hmm.
it they will.
And
wow.
That's a whole other show that we can do at some other point, but
yes.
the fact is that you don't even know what kind of data is being taken on your child now because everything's online and you can't see the assessments, and so you don't know what your child is answering, and your
right.
child becomes numb to some of these questions, and so who is the data going to and for what purpose, and you know, who has access to it?
And you've got parents working that send their kids to school believing everything's okay and hunky-dory, and they don't even think to ask a question about, they don't even question the questions. And it kind of reminds me of the story a couple of weeks ago, or about a week ago, of the mom who took her daughter to the doctor for a checkup or something, and she was informed that the doctor would have a 5-minute time with her child to ask questions and so forth, and that the mother would not be allowed in the room. And that, and that the child's medical information would be online for the child to see, but the parents would be exempted if the child didn't want them to see that medical information. The parents weren't going to be allowed to see it. And we're talking about a minor child, because
right.
she was 15 years old. So, you know, and that's the same type of, anyway, that is another topic for another show, but yeah, I'm going down a rabbit trail. But it's
well, there are a lot of them when it comes
yes,
to
there
the
are. I've started likening it to an octopus with more arms than a traditional octopus. That's what this whole Common Core thing is, and everything that's involved.
Well, and what I would tell people is that the one thing that is irrefutable is that Common Core was adopted and implemented. It was a circumvention of the political process. It bypassed your state legislatures, and it bypassed the voters. There's no mm-hmm. getting around that, and there's no arguing that. So if you understand that it is the transformation of our political process, of our representative government, then mm-hmm. you should be against Common Core just for that issue. Now, if your state
right.
board wanted to adopt Common Core, if they thought Common Core was great, but without the copyright and without the, you know, the waivers being held over your head and that sort of thing, if it was truly voluntary, and you could stop it at any time, and or you could modify it, that's one thing. But the point is what they adopted and implemented is privately owned. It's copyrighted. You can't change it. You can't modify it. It's difficult to get out of it. I mean, it's not representative, and no voter ever voted for it, or even legislator. So mm-hmm. if you just think about it in those terms, and then you look at these people and you think, how valid are they? Their two main talking points will make you STEM ready, but, oh, yeah, now it's only for junior college, and, yeah, our standards are higher. Well, no, now they're only the floor. You got to if they were a private company, well, they are a private company, but if you were buying their product, if you as a consumer was buying their product, you'd say, wait a minute, I'm going to sue mm-hmm. you because you have claims that are unsubstantiated, and now you're
right.
changing your story. What product are you giving me anyway?
Right, absolutely. And we're talking about our children and our children's education and their future children, grandchildren. And so, Gretchen, and how can people help get involved? What, you know, they're listening to this. What would you tell them their first step is? What do they need to do first?
Well, they should go to mowagainstcommoncore.com and be sure to join so that they get the updates and check back there
right.
what news is going on and what information we have for the public. But really what they need to do is become very, very involved in their local school district. They need to research
mm-hmm.
what their budget is, what their curriculum is, because the state statute, and Betsy will say all over, you have local control, you choose the curriculum, you can do what you want to do. If Common Core is the floor, then you can do all kinds of things beyond Common Core. So if you
mm-hmm.
want to have the math and science, you're going to have to be the local advocate with your school board to say, I don't care if we don't test for these things. We want to keep this in the curriculum.
Right. So parents are going to have to be advocates to keep the right things in their school district.
Absolutely. Because otherwise,
okay.
the only thing the school district will focus on is that which is getting tested.
Right. Right. So that's Missouri Coalition Against Common Core.com?
Yeah, mowagainstcommoncore.com.
Mowagainstcommoncore.com. Okay. And,
right.
of course, I highly recommend Missouri Education Watchdog.com. You can go there, and if this is something that you're interested in, you can get just all of the research, and I know the research that Gretchen's – well, I know part of the research that Gretchen's done. I can't claim to know everything she's been through to get that research done. And just the hours and the – you just cannot imagine what these ladies have done to be able to speak on this subject with authority, and they can. And that information is there on Missouri Education Watchdog for you to look through at your leisure and to become an informed advocate for real education reform, not Common Core. So, Gretchen, was there anything else that you wanted to say?
Well, I would just say, you know, if people don't believe that Lois Lerner's emails were erased or or then they're not going to believe, you know. I mean, you got to be skeptical, right?
Yeah.
And so you got to be skeptical of these reformers saying that this is the panacea for education and that they,
right.
they just want us to be, you know, have a wonderful life. I mean, come on. Be realistic.
What?
Do your own research and find out really what is the truth.
Right, right. And Common Core is to education. What they are doing through this Common Core, it is to education what Obamacare is to our medical system.
Centralized, yeah, it's centralization. And it's
mm-hmm.
taking away any local authority to make any decisions.
Mm-hmm.
That's
taking
it.
Taking away your personal ability to make decisions, taking away your personal autonomy.
Right.
That's all involved there, too. So,
right.
Well, thank you so much, ladies, for joining me tonight. I can't believe how fast an hour can go. I was worried that I wouldn't be able to keep this going for an hour, to be honest. So,
you did a great job.
I appreciate the information that you ladies bring to the table and the amount of work that you put into it. And I just keep up the good fight and keep up the good work, and I hope you'll join me again sometime if I'm sitting in for Lisa, and we can talk some more about this issue. And there are so many different trails to be explored and so many more things for people to understand. But I felt that this issue is one that people can wrap their heads around and go, wait a minute, I understand exactly what they're doing here. And hopefully we've been able to present it in a way tonight that you're understanding that there's something really wrong here, and that it's going to cost us a lot now and in the future. So thank you again, ladies, for coming and joining me.
Thank you, Cindy.
Folks, I'm going to take a quick commercial break, and then I am going to come back, and we're going to listen to Lisa's interview about the Delphi technique.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
So dear, for peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
Well, hello, folks. Welcome back. This is Cindy sitting in for Lisa tonight. We're about to join Lisa in an interview that she did back in November on the Delphi technique. I hope that if you were able to listen to tonight's show, either tonight or to the podcast, that you will find something useful there and you will become better educated about what is going on in our education system, because we are being fundamentally transformed as a nation, and one of the ways that that is happening is through our education system. And there are entities, international corporations, and all sorts of special interest groups that have gotten involved in this Common Core issue and are pushing for it, and they're pushing for it to benefit their own coffers and not to benefit your children. So it is up to you, the parents and the grandparents, to get involved, to be educated, and to stand up and say no. So I look forward to being with you again with Lisa, and here's Lisa.
Welcome back. You're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and this is Culture Vigilante. And we're here every Wednesday evening at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. We are a Missouri Grassroots Coalition, and we're here to fight for Missouri issues and issues across the country that affect Missourians as well. And tonight, as we promised, we have an entire panel in the studio with us tonight of folks from across the state of Missouri who have been outraged and motivated enough to attend what is what amounted to little more than a spin session last Thursday night from the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education to explain to the citizens of Missouri what Common Core standards is all about from their perspective. And what we found out, or what we learned from that session, was that they weren't really, not that it's a surprise to anybody, of course, but they weren't really interested in getting your feedback or having you participate in the discussion. They were more interested in helping you come to certain conclusions about what Common Core, they were going to lead you to a conclusion about how nice and fluffy and cozy and warm Common Core standards is, and it's going to be for your kids. Much to the surprise of the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education, it just, you know, the meeting didn't turn out to be quite what they thought it was going to be. People are starting to push back a little bit. And we have represented here tonight, we have six different people from across the state of Missouri who attended five of the eight different locations where meetings were held last Thursday night. Let's introduce them one by one. I think we have everybody's mic on, so if you can hear me, let me know. We have Van Harvey. Van Harvey attended the Lindbergh meeting in district in St. Louis area. Thanks for being with us tonight, Van.
Hi, Lisa. Thanks.
Van, what you've written some great pieces about that about the meeting this week. What is the name of your blog?
Blogodidact.
Okay, thank you. Been trying to pronounce that all week. Okay. Okay, blog.
It was me trying to get cute between autodidact and blog, and wasn't thinking about having to say it.
Okay, well, don't worry about pronouncing it. Just go there and read Van's post, because he has some great posts about it. Okay, and next we have Melissa Leach. Melissa is a former state representative from down in the Springfield area, and she attended the Springfield meeting. Thanks for being with us, Melissa.
I'm glad to be here, Lisa. Thanks for doing the panel tonight.
Oh, we really appreciate you guys jumping on. I know that you each have a lot to contribute, so we'll move on down the line. Scott Pinkham. Scott Pinkham was one of two people that attended the Hazelwood meeting last Thursday evening. Scott, thank you for being with us.
Hi, Lisa. Good to be with you.
And Elizabeth O'Fallon also attended the Hazelwood meeting.
Hi. Thank you, Lisa.
Okay. And we also have Brian Bowman from the Cape Girardeau area. Is that right, Brian?
Yes, ma'am.
And what is the name of your blog, Brian?
RockinConservative.com.
There you go. Okay, go to also, if you have a chance, Google that and go to Rockin' Conservative, folks. Brian had some great posts about the meeting as well. And let's see, have I got everybody? Got Van, Brian, Stacy, Elizabeth, Scott, Melissa. We got everybody, right?
You bet.
Okay,
I think
great.
We're all here.
Okay. All right. Feel free to jump in, folks. We got a lot of people in the studio tonight, but you've each got something individual to contribute to this discussion, and we want to hear from everybody. Basically, though, and I've told this to the audience before. About 13 years ago, I was elected to the Francis Howell School Board. Okay, got a huge education in educational bureaucracy at that time, and the first time that I ever attended a district-wide meeting, it was run in much the same way of the meeting that you folks experienced last Thursday night. Education folks and government bureaucratic folks love to run meetings this way. I've attended actually some Agenda 21 meetings run exactly the same way. What they like to do is they like to supposedly ask for your intake on all of these
yes.
issues, and then they bring you together in a room and divide you up and assign leaders to your group so that you don't have
facilitators.
The facilitators.
Divide and conquer.
Absolutely.
Divide and conquer.
And this technique is called the Delphi technique, and you can actually find out information about this on the internet. It's a common technique that's used in all of these kinds of situations where they want to kind of give you the impression that they're including you in the process.
Yeah, you have a voice.
You have a voice, but you don't really have the opportunity to exercise your voice. And is it fair to say, from all of the six of you here tonight, that that's what you experienced last Thursday evening?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I'm disappointed we let him get away with it down here in Cape.
Well, okay. Well, let's start with you, Brian. To lay the meeting out a little bit, okay, there's some video. I did there's an article up at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org about the meetings and about the Delphi technique, and I did get some video from somebody at the Springfield meeting, I think, took some video.
I was actually sitting at that table. A former constituent of mine was the one that was taking the video, and she was just right to my right. And so that was pretty exciting.
Okay, so Melissa's in the video. You'll be able to see Melissa in the video. And basically what they did was they had a presentation set out and a format, and they had people telling you how great Common Core was and how they want this process to evolve over time. And
right.
and then they broke you up into groups and asked you two questions. So, Brian, let's start with you, because your meetings seem to be the most complicit with the process going on there. What happened down there in Cape Girardeau?
Yeah, sadly, we were well-behaved down there. We arrived at the event, and we had a meeting the night before to try to get organized. We had a bunch of questions ready to ask. We had papers to hand out. We were handing out the Missourians Against Common Core flyers on the way in. And as I was standing there waiting to go in, I heard somebody say that you have to get assigned to a table, and I knew that wasn't going to be good. So we walked in. I saw that they had 15 tables set up, and it quickly determined that it was going to be a divide-and-conquer type method. We arrived at our table, sat down. There was a table recorder and a table facilitator. The piece of paper that they had was two questions on the piece of paper. What do you like about Common Core,
right.
And what questions do you have about Common Core? Not any questions or any thoughts about, do you have any problems with Common Core? No. So they went through their dog and pony show with a video and a speech by a gentleman whose name escapes me. They didn't care whether or not you could hear it. It was all muffled and jumbled. You couldn't hear hardly a word that was being said on the video. And you could tell they just didn't really care, because it didn't matter. They had their outcome planned, and they had people at tables, saying good things about Common Core, so they were able to walk away with all these great things that Kate is saying about Common Core and a few questions that need to be answered. So that was my first experience with Delphi Technique. I work in the car industry, and Delphi is a car parts manufacturer in my world.
Okay.
Hey, Lisa, I will go ahead and echo him where the thing that really struck me with this our meeting was rather quiet, too. But the thing that was crazy is that we all had to come to a consensus before anything
yes.
could be written down. And that, we had six to seven people at our table, and how are six to seven people supposed to come to the absolute consensus about everything we're writing down? And I don't know, I knew a lot about Common Core, but I also blog. I blog for the Source and Path, so I kind of came in as a reporter sort of person where I kind of pretended to be dumb and asked questions. And I was amazed that any question we had about Common Core, our table facilitator couldn't answer, but she was very well-versed on all the benefits of Common Core. So I found that really interesting.
Let me just ask you, because it seems to be from the videos that I saw and from the questions that I've asked and the feedback that I've gotten from folks, that seems to be a common theme. They could not answer your questions. Would that be an accurate assessment from most of you folks? I'm getting
confused. Well, they claimed to not be qualified to answer them, which I thought was crazy. We have a room full of administrators and representatives and people like that, but nobody is qualified to answer any questions on Common Core.
The answer that the lady gave at ours when after some persistent questions was, I can't answer that in a public sense.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh,
the public
can't answer your question in a public sense.
Maybe that was supposed to be an invitation to one of the side rooms with you, you know?
It was crazy. When they handed out the questionnaire, that was a laugh-out-loud moment. And I think people in general up to that point were voicing a few questions here and there, a few mutterings. But after that, it was very much, we don't want to go into a group. We would like some questions answered. Why are you not prepared to answer? Oh, that was intense.
Well, here in Springfield, we were condescended to by the administrators and the school personnel that were there. In fact, several of our school board members were there. And you could hear them from around the room. It was just like, you know, can we please, you know, do the meeting, sit down, be quiet, you know. And it was just like, really? Are we fourth graders?
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah,
but that's very typical of a lot of educational meetings. That's what I've found over the years. You know, they know what the outcome is that they want you to have as upon leaving the meeting. And so this is a part of the plan. You know, at our meeting in Hazelwood, we had probably 75, maybe 80 people there. 10 to 11 tables were laid out, and the same two questions, of course, were printed on our papers. But there was, in fact, a Hazelwood-appointed facilitator, Wonk, sitting with us. And she told us on multiple occasions, please hurry, we're running out of time. You should probably stop discussing what you're discussing, and you probably need to begin writing your questions right away. And more than likely, multiple questions will not be considered. But we very politely ignored her and let her know that it was very important that we talk about these issues. And thank God everybody at my table was like-minded. And she actually had to get up and leave a couple of times because she had no idea how to handle us and could not answer any of the questions that we had. But it was really remarkable. No question and answer period was offered, although I did get a good question in about SBAC. It was cool. We had two video glitches, so right in the middle of the State Commissioner of Education explaining the benefits and the glorious wonders of Common Core, all of a sudden the video went dead. And then the facilitator of the meeting at large just said, well, we'll go to the next one. So we had two video glitches. But right from the beginning, the deceit and duplicity was just so rampant. No data is being sent to feds. It's not a federal program. It's completely state-led, completely state-run, completely state-initiated.
I kept hearing that, you know, it's not national. Well, how is something that's 45 states not national? I mean, whether it was done independently or not, which we don't believe that it was, but how is that not national? You know, it might as well be.
Yeah.
So the reality, I mean, they basically, you were absolutely lied to in this meeting.
Yes.
I mean, they're telling you that it's not state-led. We know that it's not, or that it is state-led. We know that it's not state-led. You know,
the gentleman absolutely said and lied, saying that there is no data collection. If you go to ccsso.org, you can find all kinds of information about the data they're going to be collecting through this EIMAC program. It's right there on their website, and they stood up in front of us and lied to us.
Well, my facilitator at my table actually said we already collect tons of data, so that's how she reasoned that away, is that, well, we already are collecting this data. Why not, you know,
why not share it with
further?
Others?
Yeah, but just saying that, oh, well, that's an excuse because we already do this, so therefore this isn't a violation of any sort of privacy issue or anything like that.
In our Camden meeting,
nothing about the changes in the FERPA law, nothing, you know, nothing about how, you know, your HIPAA information becomes part of the education record. There was no discussion about that.
In our meeting at Camdenton, it was interesting because they said data collection is not required. It's not required. They used that word required. And I think the other thing that was so interesting was with the questions that were presented at the end of the night, every administrator that was sitting at each of the tables actually got to choose what they thought the best questions were, none of which really reflected the best, what I thought or anyone else thought the best questions at the table truly were. They were almost like they knew what they were going to take. And then they say, we'll take these back to Desi, and in a couple, you know, a couple days we'll have a fact sheet for you on the website.
Well,
can I comment on that before?
Sure.
The president didn't give you a participation ribbon.
Is that Van?
Yeah, I wanted to highlight that part of the meeting, too, because they took the questions from the table, and it was interesting. They constantly read every part of everything that they liked about Common Core. But the questions, well, they didn't repeat any of the questions. They didn't repeat them over and over again because, you know, they didn't want to waste that kind of time. But, boy, for the things that you liked about, they could say that over and over and over again.
Well, I like how we all got participatory applause after, at our particular meeting, we were all applauded for, we had to clap for each individual table about what a good job we did giving questions and giving feedback, but yet they couldn't address any of our questions or give us any feedback. But yet we all got a nice round of applause, so we all felt good at the end of the evening.
Okay, well, I'd like to go down.
I checked Desi's website today. There's no answers on there yet.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'd like to go down the line and get a consensus from the group one by one. So let me just go down the line. Okay, Brian, we already know that the Cape Girardeau crowd was pretty quiet and complicit, and you didn't have a lot of pushback at that meeting. How was the Springfield meeting? We have video on that, Melissa. So we know that you guys were vocal and you guys were pushing back.
If I could do this just real quick, Lisa, especially if you're at the Missouri Education Watchdog blog site, if you'll go down to the part five, it's one of the video clips that isn't in a YouTube format, but part five, it's the great video clip where we had Mike Woodkey, who is the Region G area supervisor for DESE, and he's also on the 8-page list of supporters of Common Core. He was the presenter that night, and ironically, he also could not answer any questions. But he makes a great statement in there that a gentleman to my left was kind of challenging him about the fact that they weren't going to answer any questions, and he challenged him. And Mike said, look, if you don't like the format of the meeting, you're welcome to leave. And Dr. McDonald goes, oh, yeah, that's right. That's how you solve the problem. You know? And then Charlie to the right of me says, we'll be polite. We'll answer the questions. And he's still denying it. And he goes, finally, Woodkey says, I'm not qualified to answer any questions. And this other lady, my table, goes, then why are you here?
And Melissa, we know your meeting was very well attended. Brian, did you have a standing room only crowd in the Cape, or how was the crowd?
Yeah, we sure did. We had, 15 tables with about six people at each table plus the two facilitators. There was probably another 10 people either standing or sitting around outside of those tables.
Yeah.
I believe some extra chairs were pulled up to tables. We had a full crowd. I'd say 80% of it was in opposition to Common Core. And unfortunately, we were very well
behaved.
We had a full house at Lindbergh also. I think we had 150, 200 people there.
That's a great turnout.
At which location was that?
At Lindbergh.
At Lindbergh, okay. And Scott and Elizabeth, how was the crowd at Hazelwood?
I'm guessing maybe 75.
Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of them were administrators, though.
Oh, many.
By the time
Q&A came, they left.
Yeah, we saw a lot of, my table itself had seven people, and of those seven, three of them were affiliated with the district. So,
Stacy, what did you experience in Camdenton?
It was standing room only. There were probably, I'm going to guess, 15 to 20 tables. They were all full, and so there were people standing in the back of the room. And I would say at least a good 60-70% were against Common Core. People weren't shouting out or anything like that, but there was definitely resistance at almost every table. It appeared that the educated people were the people against it, and so the facilitators were learning from the people that went in to ask questions. The facilitators, I think, learned something that night. They had no idea. They've drank the Kool-Aid, and they know their talking points. But the people that went in that truly know what's going on, that was the interesting perspective for me, is I think they might have learned something that night from the people who were asking the educated questions.
That's interesting.
But you know, when does job security come into that? It's one thing to learn, but then I unfortunately, so many administrators and so many teachers, and I don't blame them for that. Job security is always the question.
True.
So you have to roll with whatever wind of doctrine is presently blowing through town.
Well,
so
and then
there's an issue there.
They're also having
yes.
classes on this constantly because my brother's a public school teacher. He's a high school teacher in the Wright City School District. And, you know, they have these meetings all the time. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're supposed to have full implementation by 2015. And I just think it's funny that, you know, of course they're going to believe what they hear, you know, in these meetings.
Well, my husband is a teacher, actually, in Camdenton. And that is true. I mean, I think that everything that they're indoctrinated to believe. It's so amazing to me being married to a teacher. My mother and father-in-law were teachers, and we're very plugged in with the teachers here. A lot of them are our friends. And it always amazes me when talking to teachers how very little they know about anything. I mean,
well,
they don't know. Yes.
I think a number of them are starting to realize how little freedom that they're going to have under
yes.
the system.
So let me ask Scott, because I know Scott is a teacher. Scott, I'm getting reports back from teachers. I mean, from what I'm hearing, it's becoming more increasingly difficult for you guys to be able to do your job. I mean, you are on strict
mm-hmm.
schedules and timelines, and there's
yes.
no flexibility.
And we're crunching data all the time, yes.
Yeah, there's no flexibility for you guys to do what you need to do in the classroom. The reason that you hire good teachers is because they each have a style in relating to students and understanding their needs in learning. You know, and it seems like the influx of this bureaucratic curriculum and this bureaucratic management of education has taken that out of the classrooms and not allowed teachers. You're more robotic than you are doing your teaching. You know, using your teaching skills.
I think in a lot of cases that's so true. You know, we've talked so many times over the years about differentiated instruction. I'm certain that most of you know what that's all about. Finding those ways to get through to each and every learner, but yet we're all being treated as though we are the same, and creativity seems to have gone out the window. You know, I've been in the classroom 22 years, and when I first started in this profession, I started when I was 38, I had the luxury of teaching to the, I'm going to say, the bottom of the top of my learners. Do you know what I mean? If you have a top, middle, and lower level of learners, sometimes we have to look at it that way. I used to teach to maybe the bottom of the top. Now I'm teaching to the bottom of the middle. And it's a remarkable transformation that's taken place just in my 22-year career.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are, you know, I see every single kid as a gift from God. I see every single kid that has a plan from God for their life, but yet we are treating them as educators as though they were all the same. We are testing them as though they're all the same. And this is what blew my mind at the meeting the other day. You know, that according to the Delphi technique, they just deposited these thoughts into so many of the people's minds. And when people were reporting out from the table, what did we hear over and over again? Yeah, this is going to level the playing field. Yes, it's going to increase the rigor. Yeah, our kids are going to be college ready. Our kids are finally getting a break. And from my perspective, and maybe other folks will agree with me, the playing field could not possibly be any more level than it is with all the accommodations and redos and everything else that we allow to go on in the classroom. And actually, I see it kind of slightly worse than that. I think the playing field has been kind of scooped out. And what's really happened is we're creating a shallow bowl. It's no longer level. It's a bowl, and all learners are required to swim in it, every single one of them.
I don't think there's any playing left in the field. It is too regimented, too described to enable either students or teachers to do what they need to do. And that's the peril of top-down planning. It seems like such a smart idea at the top of it, but as you try to impose that on a large number of people, you regiment what they do. They can no longer think for themselves. They have no room to. There is no playing field. There is no playing on the field. It's march in line.
And that's
what
that.
What
unfortunately, that's one of the casualties of data-driven instruction.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry to interrupt.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me ask you, Scott. Let's get back to that question again about the teachers. Okay, we know what this is going to do to the students. This is not, I mean, nobody in their right mind who has any, who's ever had a child, who's ever had more than one child, knows that children are different. You cannot do a one-size-fits-all education. It is not going to work.
No.
It's not about education. Okay, so, but the teachers, what is, okay, you work with teachers every day. You're in a building with teachers every day. The general attitude of the teachers, what are they thinking? What are they talking about?
I think, honestly, number one, a lot of teachers are surprised to find out that there is some division with some of us. But I think also, you know, and they're afraid because, you know, with the MAP test, which is always a moving target, my gosh, I have never looked at the thing for fear of losing my job in 22 years, so I have no idea what that's all about. Nobody has any idea what the Common Core standards are about. But I think what's happening, in my mind, I love to study faces, and I love to look around at during meetings, faculty, or whether they're, whatever is being taught at cooperative learning is the buzzword in our district this year. I see a lot of fatigue on faces.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I can't help but think that is so intentional because, in my mind, fatigue generates compliance. And then compliance, everybody just becomes in lockstep with the wind of doctrine that's blowing through town. So I think there's a lot of fatigue. I think there's a lot of fear. I think there's a lot of questions. There are a lot of questions. And I'm certain that people really have no idea where to turn because, let's face it, most people that I know object to check. Teachers do as well. And, for fear of repercussions, vocationally and therefore financially.
So it's
tough on teachers. And the people I work with love to teach.
If I may jump in here a little bit,
please.
Just from maybe a little bit of a legislative perspective and in thinking through the whole end goal of Common Core, where a fifth grader is a fifth grader is a fifth grader, regardless of whether they live in California, Florida, New Hampshire, Missouri,
right.
or Minnesota, so they become interchangeable in the classroom. Well, the other side of that coin is Teach for America. And so if you have a teacher who is all gung-ho on Common Core, then by extension, they have to follow that same logic and go, oh, well, I support Teach for America, and I support, you know, six-week trained subject matter teachers who are going to be here maybe a couple years, 3 years, and then they're off to some, you know, policy institute.
Sure.
And so as I've talked with some of them, they've kind of looked at me very blankly, you know, at first, and then come back and gone, you know, that's right. We are the other side of that coin, and I think that's where you see that fatigue, because if you can get good teachers to comply, they're going to eventually follow their consciences and leave. And so then you're just going to have a revolving door in the schools. So a student's going to be a student, it's going to be a student. Well, a teacher's going to be a teacher as a teacher. And they're all interchangeable, and there's no differentiation at all going on.
Okay. Well,
I think TFA already has the reputation for burning people out quickly and gathering, you know, having something to put on the resume, and then they move on.
Right.
Okay. Hey, Lisa.
Yeah.
I'm a homeschooler, and so one of my reasons for going to the meeting was that, you know, as a homeschooler, you know, we're kind of always in a state of flux, you know, we're always watching legislation, what's going to happen. And my concern is, like, you know, I took my kids out of the public school system because they didn't fit in the mold. And, you know, I have some special needs kids, and so we've been able to achieve those things at home in a smaller setting, and they just have excelled. But I don't see how these standards can be pushed across 45 states, you know, accepted in public schools and private schools and not affect me. You know, I know we've got a great homeschooling law, but I just, you know, especially when the standards and the testing is changing, how are we going to stay under the radar? I don't think we are.
Is this, you
know,
Elizabeth or Stacey?
That was Elizabeth.
Elizabeth. Okay, so, I'm a homeschooling mom too, Elizabeth.
Me too.
Awesome. Yeah, so you're right. You're not going to stay under the radar. And that, you know, that is a point that I did want to bring up tonight too. Okay, homeschooling legal defense has been all over this issue. They have been all over this issue for homeschoolers. It is not, homeschooling is not exempt. Private schooling is not going to be exempt. Everybody's
right.
going to be under the same umbrella, because if any of us intend to track our
right.
kids into a college or
sure.
university, they have to be able to pass the college entrance exams, which will be aligned to Common Core.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed all the curriculum providers are starting already
to switching over to Common Core.
Yeah, I think they see the writing on the wall. They're like, okay,
sure.
well, if we don't accept Common Core, we're not going to be,
And even in the colleges and universities that don't require an ACT or an SAT score, the problem is that as our homeschool kids and private school kids then mainstream with the public school kids into their, remember that all of the college curriculum is also going to be, is Common Core aligned. So
right.
if you haven't been brought up in the groupthink, then you're going to have a hard time adjusting into college classes, because they're going to become more and more reflective of the Common Core methodology of instruction.
Well, I'm not really as worried about that, because we already experienced that. Our kids are not aligned into the groupthink as it is, and our kids typically perform better in colleges.
Mm-hmm.
Than they do now.
That's because they're independent thinkers, though. It's
That's
like
right.
if we move towards a collective consciousness and a collective sort of approach to education that doesn't value those individuals,
right? And
if
your grades depend
well.
On the group always, whether the answer is right or wrong,
mm-hmm.
Remember that college, higher ed is going to be aligned to the same, concepts.
Mm-hmm.
As a homeschool mom, this is my prayer, that what this will create is private schools, Christian colleges, private colleges that will have their own, realize that competition is good,
yes.
and that
yes.
they'll have their own set of entrance exams for my child that's homeschooled, or my child that isn't a part of the group thing. Because the problem is, when you understand the kind of math our children are being taught and how the MAP test actually grades or has scored those skill sets, which I don't consider skill sets at all,
mm-hmm.
that, it is hard for, I pulled my kids out, or two of them. I have a daughter in high school at the public school, and then I had a son to go back to seventh grade this year, but I still have my little guy with me. And I just pray that the private institutions will align themselves with the freedom that we're educating, that we truly will output. I know that's sad to say,
mm-hmm.
but the leaders of the future will be the homeschool kids that don't conform.
Right.
And hopefully we'll have a demand at the universities that are private for our kids, and they will be the leaders. That's my prayer.
Okay, I want Cindy to jump in here because she's had a question, and then I want to talk about legislation. Go ahead, Cindy.
Thank you. This is Cindy. I'm sitting with Lisa tonight. You guys are all awesome. You just rock. I think it's awesome that you went to these meetings and you're able to report. Thank you. One of the things that occurred to me listening to this, and I've really seen this with Common Core, and I was a homeschool teacher also many years ago, but I think what concerns me is that I see, and maybe you guys can give me some feedback here about what you think about this, but basically what we're dealing with is we're dealing with a system now that is being put in place that is out to destroy traditional teachers. And I'm talking about the good teachers.
Yeah.
We don't want them, because what they're really trying to do is to create a national workforce and to drive our children into careers
yep.
of the government's choosing. And
right.
I think that
yes.
is ultimately where we're headed with this.
Human assets.
Absolutely. Yeah. They are
exactly.
human capital that the stakeholders have an interest in. And that language is theirs, not mine.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's pretty much been the game plan since about 100 so years ago.
Exactly
and
right.
It's now becoming more and more explicit.
And
I think
if I could jump in just for a second, something else that I think I've talked about this for the longest time, and people just think I'm nuts, but in addition to the government winning as they develop human assets, and human assets, of course, are future taxpayers, and that keeps the revenue base going, you know who else wins big time in all of this? The publishers.
Yeah, and the technology giants.
We are talking about hundreds of billions of dollars that are to be made as a result of Common Core. And, of course, our MAP test, my gosh, that's not printed here in Missouri. That's printed in California by McGraw-Hill. Every
mm-hmm.
single day on my email account at school, I get some sort of program that's for sale that's aligned to Common Core curriculum. The other day I got one about Common Core state standard bell ringers. $100, and if you don't know, a bell ringer is something that can engage the kids while you're taking attendance and doing your meet and greet, and it's just something to get them thinking about today's lesson. Well, $100 per grade level, K through 12. That's one company. We got material called in an email about Kagan materials today. These are cooperative learning manipulatives, and cooperative learning is the big wind of doctrine blowing through town. And by the way, at our professional development this year, we learned, I think, either 28 or 30 different structures, which, first of all, have to be taught in class so the kids can successfully utilize these in class to implement true cooperative learning. And then just today, something from Great Educators, Common Core State Standards Curriculum Mapping. It's a group of consultants which will come into your school for untold dollars and who will spend time with your different departments and align your present curriculum so they just remove the sweat and the agony for you, all for a fee, of course. So,
right. So there is absolutely no doubt. There is, education is not about education anymore. It is an industry, and there is money to be made, and that's why this is pretty much moving forward. But okay, but we're running a little bit short on time. It's okay, and we can do this again. This has been fabulous. But I want to talk about the legislation that's pending. Okay, we've got a couple of pieces of legislation that are in the legislature now. We've got SB 210, which is up for a hearing any day now, and you can go to Missouri Education Watchdog and sign a witness form to support that legislation if you like.
Been there, done that.
And I'll also post that up at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. And we've got HB 616. Now, okay, funny, here's the situation, folks, with these two pieces of legislation. The one with legs, the SB 210, is the legislation that does absolutely nothing to really stop Common Core this session. It brings a little bit of accountability, maybe a little bit of transparency into the issue. We have a huge bureaucracy, the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education, which is running the show, and it kind of makes them jump through a few hoops, but it's a stonewall piece of legislation, I think. I think that if the legislature really wanted to stop Common Core, other states have done it this year. Missouri could have done it, but they ran into some stonewalling, and they're not going to get it done this year. We're getting some feedback, buddy. Anyway, there's another piece of legislation, HB 616. Homeschooling the Defense is supporting it. I just got a thing in my inbox today from FreedomWorks. They're supporting it. All of these organizations from across the country are supporting this HB 616, which has gone nowhere. We want you to get behind both of these pieces of legislation. I don't think 616, I think 616, they're going to kill it. They're not going to allow anything to happen to it this year. The legislature does not want to stop Common Core, and that's very clear. They have given
us. I got to interrupt because what you're saying is not true. The Senate substitute for.
What I want to say about these pieces of legislation is folks, they're both important. Okay, you've got something going on here with the legislature. They're not ready to stop Common Core. They need to hear from the folks. I would encourage you to go and sign the witness forms for 210. Let them know that there are a lot of people out there who are watching this situation, and they want Common Core to go away ultimately. If you're going to throw us this bone of 210, we'll take it because it does provide some transparency. It does provide some accountability to the Department of Education, which has done nothing up to this point, really, to be accountable to the citizens or the legislature because they brought Common Core in here without their approval. But support that. Let them know that you're out there. They need to hear your voice. But also support HB 616 because HB 616 is the legislation with the teeth in it. Okay, Melissa, go ahead and make your point.
Okay, Senate Bill 210 actually halts implementation until after DESE completes all of the 8 congressional district meetings again, and those have to be done by December 31st. Then they have to make a report. So it does halt implementation. Now, Will that word get down to all of the individual school boards and the individual schools in this state? Probably not. So it's really going to be incumbent upon the residents of the school districts to go to their school boards, go to their schools, and make sure that no common core standards in English or in math or in social studies or in science are being implemented now. So that it just, they stay where they are and they're done. Nothing else goes forward until DESE is transparent and accountable. So I really think that at this point, because the education lobby, the special interest of education, you've got the Missouri Association of School Administrators, you've got the Missouri NEA, you've got MSTA, and it just runs the gamut. They just keep going. It is an industry. They're a very big industry. We have a constitutional mandate to fund education in this state, so it's a priority. So it is a big, big machine in Missouri. This is about as good as we could get because this gives us that opportunity for transparency. We get to find out what the costs are. We get to find out about the data mining thing. Then we can go from there because there's a lot of people in this state that know nothing about this yet, know nothing about it. So our job over the interim is to get out there and educate, go to meetings,
right.
Make those talks, go door to door, go to those school board meetings, go to your neighborhood meetings, go to your co-op meetings, go to your church meetings, everything you can between now and the end of the year to educate and make sure that, you've shown up at one of those congressional meetings.
Right.
So.
Okay. I want to thank everybody for being on the panel tonight. I appreciate everybody's time. I told you I'd only keep you for half an hour, and we've almost used the entire hour, and I really appreciate you folks coming on and letting us pick your brain.
Thank you, Lisa.
This.
It was fun.
Okay. Before
thank
you go,
thank you.
Melissa, you have a radio appearance tomorrow morning. When is that?
I do, 7 to 8 on KSGF, which is 102.1 here in Springfield, or you can listen streaming at KSGF.com from 7 to 8.
And Van, tell me about your blog one more time.
Blogodidact.
Okay,
it's,
what was that?
On education in general.
WordPress, blogodidact.com?
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, it's Blogspot.
Blogspot, okay.
So blogodidact.blogspot.com.
And I think we lost Brian a while ago, the Rocking Conservative. Look for the Rocking Conservative. And who was it that blogs for the patch in Florissant?
Elizabeth, I blog for Florissant Patch, and I'll be probably this evening or tomorrow posting my comments and thoughts on our meeting with Common Core last week.
Excellent. Go ahead.
I would say Brian's blog has some really excellent questions on there that if people pick those up and pass them around among themselves, we can get a little dull roar going here.
Excellent. Yeah, he's done some great. He had a great post right after the meeting the other day. Have I left anybody else out? Has anybody else got something to plug?
No, not I. Just love teaching in the classroom.
Thank you for your work today, Scott.
You bet.
Thank you, Stacy.
You're welcome.
Everybody, we really appreciate you coming in. We will maybe try to do this again as time goes by, and
okay.
We always appreciate your input. Thank you so much.
Thank
Good
you.
To be with
Thank
you.
You.
Thanks for joining us tonight, folks. And next week, Lisa Payne-Nager, your culture vigilante, will be back. We'll talk to you then.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.